dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In that battle space, there is arguably no more serious threat to the United States of America than Communist China. And I'm not talking about the coronavirus. That is something we will turn to in due course. I'm talking about really across a very broad and very dynamic front. China is supplanting, or seeking at least to supplant, the United States as the world's dominant power. How much do the American people know about that reality? How much, for that matter, do their leaders or would-be leaders know about that reality? And how much would the American people want the next commander-in-chief, who will undoubtedly be tasked with contending with the threat from China, whether it's in the economic space, the national security arena, or perhaps even the public health one? This is going to be job one. And our view is, particularly the Committee on the Present Danger, China, that the American people need to know the answers to these questions. What do they understand about China, and what will they do about it before they hire the next president of the United States? A man who has enormously good understanding of what the American people are thinking and what they expect of their government officials is a friend of mine of many years, whom I've come to respect enormously for his acumen and accuracy in understanding public sentiment through polling, which is what he does for a living. His name is John McLaughlin. He is the CEO and a partner in McLaughlin and Associates, one of, if not, well, for my money, the best public polling company in the United States, whose clients over the years have included quite a number of prominent public officials, including, I think, the President of the United States the last time I checked. John McLaughlin is the man who has just conducted a new national poll of likely voters for the Committee on the Present Danger, China, and we have him on to talk with us a bit about some of its rather important findings. John McLaughlin, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's good to have you with us, my friend. So, John, if you would, just level set for us on the, you know, particulars of this poll. We wanted to really understand what the thinking was of people who are likely, as I say, to hire the next commander-in-chief. Who did you canvass and how?
It was 1,000 likely voters, and it was modeled on the results from the 2016 election. So we not only know that they're voters when we call or contact them, because it was done online, but when we contact them, we know they're voters. They also have to respond that they're likely to vote in November. And it was modeled after the 2016 results, so you don't have the skews of the media polls where there's not enough Republicans or there's too many Democrats, et cetera. And the survey, it's fresh out of the field because it was done January 27th through the 30th. So it was just completed. And you have an accuracy of plus or minus 3%, 19 times out of 20. And the results of this survey, a lot of them very much outside the margin of error, as pollsters refer to it, where it's not even close. So a lot of the results are, quite big, quite astounding, and I think certainly set the table for the way they might look at issues regarding China and the United States.
The poll, let me just ask about methodology, John, because a woman you know, and I think all of America does now pretty well, Kellyanne Conway, did a poll for an organization that I'm associated with some years ago, the Center for Security Policy, and she was massively attacked for the fact that it was an online poll. This seems to be the state of the art, is it not? And I don't quite understand what the beef was at the time, but is this in fact now standard procedure for people in your line of work?
It's become that way because over 90% of Americans are on the internet, but less than half have landlines in their homes. So it's very difficult and hard to contact people by cell phones, but we do. It just gets more expensive. So the online polling is very efficient. People actually prefer it. They'd rather, you know, look at a questionnaire, whether it's their iPhone or their mobile or their Android device. They'd rather just fill it out on their handheld device rather than take a phone call and speak to a professional interviewer.
Especially a long poll, as this one was, some 50-plus questions, as I recall, and that's a lot of time to be sitting there talking to somebody asking you questions. Whereas, as you say, online, you can do it very efficiently, and people are comfortable doing so. Do you have any questions, John, about the accuracy of online polling?
No, I think you already mentioned that when I worked for President Trump in 2016, we were one of the few people that said he was going to win. And it was because we avoided the bias and the skews of a lot of media polls. And what you're seeing is the people that criticized Kellyanne back then, they probably own phone centers. But right now, Americans, we're a very high tech society, and people would, you know, they don't mind giving their opinion. They like to give their opinions. But on the internet, it's probably the best way to get a lot of their opinions, particularly millennials, because phone surveys tend to skew older. So the younger voter, that the Generation Z, the millennial voters, the way you get their opinions is you reach them online.
I think it's in the interest of completeness, it's probably important to note that one of the reasons that Kellyanne was so badly beaten up about this poll was the findings involving sentiments of Muslim Americans were very much at odds with what the conventional wisdom and sort of politically correct line was. And to her credit, I think she got it absolutely right. But that's a topic for another day. John, let me talk to you about China. I'd like to go through some of these results, and I just want to underscore something that you said there, lest it have been lost on our audience. Most of these findings are well outside of the margin of error. In fact, they really seem quite lopsided, and they seem to follow, you know, sort of as we designed the poll to be, first of all, focused on what do you know, and then what do you think about the facts. And I'd like you to just sort of talk us through how that played out.
Well, I think first of all, we would ask about awareness, so that you would have questions first of all, you asked right off the bat, you asked if America see China as an economic competitor, an adversary, or a friend, or an enemy. And the amazing part about that answer was that that 49% of, you know, the majority of Americans, they actually saw China, 49.9% saw it as an economic competitor. And an adversary was 18%, just another nation was 18%. Only 8% said they were an enemy. But then when you ask them about China, their leader wanting to declare that country will become the world's dominant power, 53% of Americans said they were aware of that. But a lot of times, and when you make them, when you discuss these things, they become worried. So you get 66% saying that they were worried if they do become the world's dominant power.
And John, hold the thought, because that's where we want to come back to, is once they know more about what's going on here, there's a lot to be worried about for sure. John McLaughlin is our guest. We're going to have another segment with him to drill down on some of the extraordinary findings of his new National China Poll. Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are talking with one of the country's preeminent pollsters, a man whose accuracy in making predictions, particularly in the political arena, is extraordinary. So much so that President Donald Trump has found him to be one of the men he wants to rely upon in this space. And we do too. McLaughlin and Associates is his firm. And we're talking about this just completed poll of the American people. I call it the China poll. It will be released formally in New Hampshire in the course of the day today. As we speak, we're ahead of it, but we're going to be producing the results for you and for voters in New Hampshire and other officials, presidential contenders and the like. And John, you were just setting the stage for this by pointing out that we had tried to calibrate where the American people are on the question of there being a threat from China, and that as you went through the various questions, the degree to which they became both more aware of what China was up to and more concerned about it was quite palpable.
When you think of what China has done, I mean, everybody understands they're a major economic competitor of the United States. And even after the poll was done, as the coronavirus is spreading, it's affecting Americans' outlooks as far as our economy, the world economy, et cetera. So we understand that they're an economic power. But at the same time, I think a lot of times Americans don't think about them militarily, and they don't think about their designs on space and other areas where they would be more of a threat to the United States. But when they do, Americans are very concerned about it. And I always thought that China could become a sleeper issue in this 2020 presidential race, as well as for Congress and Senate, because all during 2019, as the president was negotiating with China and taking a hard line with them about the trade deals and doing what no president has ever done before, making China come to the table and agree to end some of their bad practices, and at the same time standing up to them on different things like Taiwan, et cetera, and encouraging, you know, the protesters in Hong Kong. As he was doing that, it becomes apparent that if China hadn't agreed to this, they would become more of a presidential year election issue, which I don't think they want to be, because American public opinion is very skeptical, if not very concerned, about what China's real goals are.
Yeah, well, let's just as an example, the question was put, would you be worried if China were to become the world's dominant power? What did you find?
Well, 66% they would be concerned, and goes up with Republicans 77%, but with Democrats and independents, it's 60%. And with conservatives, 77%, but with liberals and moderates, it's 60 and 59%, respectively. And, you know, all younger voters, 18 to 29, under 30s, they weren't as concerned, but still a majority said they were concerned, 52%. But the older the voter got, it goes up to where seniors is 75% concerned. So the majority of Americans would be very concerned if China were to become the world's dominant country.
And by contrast, in that overall aggregate number, 66 were saying that they would be concerned, and 19 said no, they were not. That's a pretty striking disparity. We're clear about, and I think Donald Trump deserves a lot of credit for this, about the degree to which China has been hollowing out our manufacturing industries and transferring jobs to China from the United States. Give us a sense, again, just top line on that, what the disparity is there.
Well, 71%. Say they're aware that China's engaged in trade practices that hollowed out our manufacturing and transferred a lot of American jobs to China. So they're aware of that. But they're not aware of, and this is the phase two of the president's trade negotiations, they're not aware that China has, through transfer of business secrets and other intellectual property, that they've been, in effect, stealing and hacking into American companies to force them to sell products in China and give up information. And only 39% said they were aware of the value of these transfers, where it's $500 and $600 billion a year. 46% were not aware, and 16% weren't sure. So we understand they're an economic adversary, and we understand that they've taken our jobs from us, but they're not aware of what's going on right now. And when they are, you know, they don't want it to happen. And then all of a sudden it extends to weapon systems, et cetera, and it becomes something that they really would be concerned about.
Yeah, it's like 74% said they would be worried about China essentially gaining a competitive advantage by stealing our military secrets and bringing them to bear against us. That's heartening, I think it's safe to say, even though it's very troubling indeed. John, there was one particularly dramatic finding in this regard with respect to China's hollowing out of our industrial capacity with respect to medicine. What did you find there?
Well, the majority of American voters take prescription drugs right now. It's 60% that say that they take prescription drugs, but only 23% are aware that China manufactures virtually all of the generic prescription drugs that are sold in the United States, and 69% would be worried if, you know, about that they could be possibly unsafe or possibly harmful. So right now, most Americans, you got 70%, say they are not aware that China manufactures virtually all our generic drugs, components, and other prescription medicines other than penicillin. So they're not aware of this. But then if they know that we're highly dependent upon supply of medicines from China that could be possibly unsafe or harmful, 69% said they're worried about it. Only 18% said no, and 13% said not sure. And I'll bet you if this virus, this coronavirus continues, it's going to get worse.
And you know, I found, John, and just anecdotally, I mean, your statistical data here is very helpful and impressive, but just anecdotally, I haven't found anybody who, when you tell them about this problem, that we are virtually completely dependent on China for generic drugs and many pharmaceuticals, certainly components in most pharmaceuticals, and none of us knows where these things are coming from. They are horrified. And, you know, they think about drywall and baby formula and dog food and flat screen displays and chips and other things that have been adulterated by the Chinese. And it's understandable why they would be very concerned indeed. 76% are concerned particularly that the supplies of such medicines might be interrupted with potentially catastrophic effects for our healthcare system. So, John, let me ask you about one of the other things that I thought was really striking about this. There was a very strong response to information about China's dissemination, manufacture, and illegal insinuation into our country of this deadly drug called fentanyl. Give us what you found there.
Well, 63% are aware that fentanyl kills roughly 70,000 Americans a year. So they're aware of that, the majority. But they're not aware that China produces and smuggles virtually all the fentanyl used in the country. Only 28% said yes, 66% said no. So they know this deadly drug's coming into the U.S., but they don't know it's coming from China. And the fact that the Chinese government knows about the manufacture of fentanyl in the country and its illegal shipments here, and has promised to shut it down but has not done so, they think it's, you know, you could call it deliberate chemical warfare against this country. And 6 out of 10 Americans, 59% agreed, 19% disagreed, 23% weren't sure. So you've got this awareness that we've got this problem, but they don't know what's coming from China. And the majority of Americans would want them to shut this down. And what's amazing about this is, you know, all the news has been about impeachment over the past few months about the president and Russian collusion. The president has spoken out, and as part of their phase one, China's supposed to shut this down. But most Americans don't know that. So you talk about the media coverage being a disconnect with the American public. Here's a classic example.
John, there's another really important theme that you've teased out here with the American people, and that is the extent to which American investors are presumably unwittingly, but nonetheless very substantially underwriting a lot of the bad things that Communist China is doing that we see already and that we have reason to believe is in the works and will be, you know, threatening us down the road. I just wanted to ask you about what you found on things like our underwriting of human rights violations in companies like Hikvision that are helping oppress, you know, faith communities, Uyghurs and others in Communist China.
Yeah, well, they don't think, I mean, you have a lot with this, the idea of these social credit technologies in China, where they keep track of people, et cetera, like that. And when you ask Americans if the Chinese company should be able to raise money from American investors, only 15% said yes, 69% said no, 16% said not sure. That the idea that American military personnel may be compelled to invest their retirement funds in Chinese companies that built weapons against them, only 11% would support that initiative, 78% oppose.
And yet that's in the offing right now. That is in the offing with the thrift savings plan. It's just unbelievable. So we're very anxious to make sure that the policymakers are aware of what these numbers look like. And John, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say, you mentioned a sleeper issue in this presidential race. Seems to me we need to continue awakening the American people. That's what we're trying to do with the Committee on the Present Danger China. And we'll be doing in the course of the day on Monday in New Hampshire, including with the rollout of this really important national poll that McLaughlin and Associates has done. I think one of the other striking findings was you asked, do you think presidential candidates should make clear their positions on the sorts of questions I've asked you? What was that number?
By the way, absolutely. So it was the vast majority of voters. It was over 6 out of 10 voters where they It's 85% think they should make clear their positions on those questions. And actually, if somebody doesn't agree with them, 6 out of 10 would actually vote against them. And when you think of what happened with Joe Biden, because even as we speak, Joe Biden has gone from front runner to into the pack in Iowa and New Hampshire, and we'll see how the voters decide his fate. But the corruption from his son, Hunter, and his family with Chinese investments were part of that. And now you've got him being about to be replaced by Mike Bloomberg, and Mike Bloomberg's empire as an oligarch, he does quite a bit of work in China, and he allows them to, he has bond markets with them, et cetera, his indexes, et cetera.
And an apologist for them. This is big. This is big. Well, we're going to wake them up. Thank you, John McLaughlin, so much, both for your time today and for your splendid professional contributions to our public policy debate, including with this most important new public opinion poll. You can find out more about it at presentdangerchina.org, folks. John, come back to us again soon, if you would. Next up, we will be speaking with Claudia Rosette about coronavirus and the Chinese Communist Party and more. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I couldn't be more pleased to say we're joined by a dear friend and much admired colleague of many, many years. Her name is Claudia Rosette. She is the recipient of what we call the Mightier Pen Award of the Center for Security Policy for her brilliant, decades-long work as an investigative journalist and editorial writer and just all-round duty expert on matters of great importance to our freedoms, our security, and our vital interests around the world. She has worked for the Wall Street Journal much of her career in places like Moscow and Hong Kong. She has written extensively about the travesties that have been part of the story of the United Nations, including having uncovered the oil for food scandal involving Saddam Hussein. She writes for PJ Media these days and in the Dallas Morning News from time to time. She is an extraordinary national treasure, and we're always pleased to have her with us. Claudia Rosette, welcome back. It's good to have you. Well, I believe the piece in the Dallas Morning News is the thing that prompted my reaching out to you, because you made a point that's very near and dear to my heart, which is that there's a malignancy coming out of China, all right, but it's not just the coronavirus. And I want to talk to you about that as a sort of symptom of the problem, but you argue that it's something bigger. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's the dictatorship of the Chinese Communist Party, which took power with Mao's victory in 1949 and celebrated its 70th anniversary in power in China, the founding of the People's Republic, last October. And that is, if you look with a sort of underneath all these very visible problems and crises of recent times, including this terrible coronavirus now, you know, spiraling out of China, what's the real problem? You know, the bottom line ailment, the thing that really China has been sick with in our time is the Communist Party, which has monopoly on power and is structured for all that they allowed economic liberalization starting in the days of Deng Xiaoping, has used all that not to reform politics, but to sort of upgrade its techniques of surveillance and its reach around the world and into people's lives. So you have a rising totalitarian system here. And out of this come fairly predictably, I'm sorry to say, things like this virus that is now spreading at speed, and which were the first people who are suffering are the people in China itself, as well as in the piece that I wrote, I was saying it's hard, very often, hard to get a really clear picture if you don't follow China closely of what's going on there exactly, because they also send out such clouds of propaganda. But we had a very clear picture, I think, coming out of Hong Kong this past year of what the problem is, where people are free to speak out, but also their freedoms are under assault by China. So you actually had a window.
And Claudia, you know, to your great credit, you've spent an enormous amount of time in Hong Kong, on the streets, speaking to the people who've been out there. I call them freedom fighters, really, because they're out on the front lines of this war for the free world. Tell us, you know, what you have taken away from the many, many, many reporting trips you've made and the interactions, interviews, and writing that you've done on the subject of Hong Kong. Are these are people who are basically okay with the one country, two systems model that the Chinese promised them? Or are they really done with the whole deal from communist China now?
Let me first say it's a pleasure to spend time there. Even in their most terrible troubles, it's a great city. And these are amazing people. It's a city with a culture of freedom that goes back some time. It was a British colony until 1997 when it was handed over to China. But the culture there is one of free enterprise, which they had under the British rule of law. And the rights and freedoms we understand, which used to be backed by British parliamentary democracy, free speech, freedom of assembly, and so on, that's what China promised them for 50 years, until the year 2047. These are the things that China has been eroding, degrading, taking away, undermining, subverting, and redefining. So Hong Kong was promised 50 years of one country, two systems, meaning it would all be under China's flag. But while China is a terrible dictatorship, Hong Kong would remain a relatively free place. And China has been redefining that to sort of take out the freedom element. Hong Kong is welcome, as China frames it, has been increasingly framing it. Hong Kong is welcome to have one country, two systems if it is defined as China does, as Hong Kong will help make money for China. It will have access to the free world as a place with a free culture and a history of relative freedom, but it will also be subservient to China with a chief executive who is under Hong Kong's rigged system, which China promised to reform and has not, who is installed by China, picked by China, and basically has every incentive to do what China says and not pay a lot of attention to what people say in Hong Kong. So you go there, and there is this culture that is of the free world. In fact, more so than some of what you'll find on American, a lot of American university campuses today. I mean, there's a generation that has grown up there. Their parents and grandparents, many of them escaped, fled communist China for greater freedom in Hong Kong. And they've raised a generation who are now of age or coming of age, who really value freedom, who are sort of on this bizarre clock where they face the end of their freedom under treaty in 2047. They're seeing it taken away much sooner. And you talk to people in Hong Kong, an enormous number of them understand a lot. It's a sophisticated understanding of how democracy works, why it's important, why freedom matters. That's what they were taking such great risks for in their protests last year that started in June and have been running on and are now running into this virus where everybody is having to hunker down because they don't want to get sick.
So in your article in the Dallas Morning News, you point out that the Chinese have accomplished through the coronavirus something that they were unable to accomplish through police action or, you know, the various coercive techniques that the politicians were engaged in until now. And does that mean, Claudia, do you think that we're going to see China exploiting the standing down of the protests to finish the job, to essentially round them up or to otherwise ensure that there is no repetition of the kind of public outpouring of opposition? And I do want to say, you sort of touched on this a moment ago, the courage that these people exhibited month after month after month in the streets, sometimes in the millions, in a relatively small population. But what do you think? Is this the end game?
Oh, I don't think it's the end game because I don't think people in Hong Kong are about to give up. I think they really care. But is it for that sort of wave of protest? For the moment, it has died down because they're still having protests, but they're now largely focused on how the government is dealing or not dealing with this virus. For instance, medical workers are poised to go on strike in Hong Kong because the China-backed chief executive Carrie Lam is refusing to actually close off the border. Hong Kong has greatly restricted the inflow from China, but has not just shut it down. So you have a situation where Hong Kong's doctors are facing the potential of having to deal with anyone who can come in from China and, you know, who that it's a desirable place to go for people who become infected in China because Hong Kong has good medical care. And right now is offering this to patients of this virus at no cost because they want people to come forward instead of hiding it. So if you don't seal the border with China, you've created a situation where Hong Kong becomes a magnet for people infected in China. That's a great example of how Hong Kong's administration doesn't really look out first for the interests of Hong Kong, because the Carrie Lam, the chief executive, is deferring to China, not listening to Hong Kong. But China will certainly try and exploit whatever it can. I mean, I don't think it was China's intention to have that effect. I think this virus was something that they did not intend to set loose, whatever reason, wherever it came from, and whatever the story was there. But at the moment, China is busy simply trying to deal with its own people, because we're seeing quite an amazing amount of free speech coming out of Wuhan, where people have really nothing left to lose. So they're finding ways to get messages out online. China's President Xi Jinping has a lot on his hands to try and crush the rising voices of discontent in China itself right now. Once that's done, Hong Kong will suffer further, no question.
Claudia, I want to come back to Xi, but we're going to have a chance to talk with you a little bit further. But before this segment ends, let me just ask you very quickly. You sort of, danced up to the edge there. We're hearing that the provenance of this disease, this novel coronavirus, as it's called, may be a biological weapons program, which has some facilities in Wuhan, not far from the so-called wet market in the city center. What do you know about that? Any thoughts on whether the Chinese Communist Party is capable of having an illegal and covert biological weapons program?
Well, it's a virtual certainty that they have a covert biological weapons program. The State Department puts out reports in which they have not ruled that out most conspicuously and have called attention to troubling signs that it may be there for a long time, including last year. And even though China has party to the Biological Weapons Convention, but as far as the source of this, I think that basically the best approach right now is don't rule out anything. And at the same time, please understand that we don't know. It is interesting, but in no way definitive, in any way, that Wuhan, where the outbreak, which is the center of the outbreak, where it began and where it's most concentrated and has been spreading from, is home to the only, as far as we know, the only publicly declared biosafety level 4 lab in China.
Claudia, hold the thought. We'll be right back with more with Claudia Rosette of PJ Media, the Rosette Report, and more right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are speaking with great pleasure with one of the most accomplished and most recognized investigative reporters in our time. Her name is Claudia Rosette. She has long experience with the Wall Street Journal, but has written for many other publications, including Forbes magazine, and now has a column at PJ Media. She is also a foreign policy fellow at the Independent Women's Forum and is a great contributor, among other places, most recently at the Dallas Morning News, to the public policy debate about things like China at the moment. And Claudia, we were talking before the break about the coronavirus and its provenance. What I'm interested in particular, though, is the extent to which the Chinese Communist Party exacerbated this problem, this now, by I think increasing official testimony, this pandemic that is spreading around the world. Talk a little bit about what they did and didn't do that contributed in that way.
Let me just first say, we don't know for sure where this originated, and there's nothing, very little we should trust in the accounts that China's government has been given us. The numbers, they started out lying about this, and it's very dicey to trust much of what they say. So this sort of discussion of, did it come from the virology laboratory in Wuhan? Did it come from the market where they sold live animals? What was the origin? We don't know. I've talked with people who are quite good at what they do, who have come down on all sides of this thing. Virologists have told me this could come from animals. It's not crazy to think that. Others have said, well, there is that lab, so where did it come from? Wherever it came from, what happened as it began to spread, as it began turning up in Wuhan, and there's even some doubt about exactly when that was, November, December, but doctors in Wuhan began seeing this very severe viral pneumonia that was turning up, and they began trying to warn people about it. They were discussing it online. They were trying to figure out what to do. And the Communist Party, the local authorities, they just shut it down. They didn't want to hear this. In fact, they arrested a number of these doctors who were trying to sound the alarm. One of them, who particularly pointed to what was going on, had to sign something sort of confessing that he'd been spreading illegal rumors. And I will say, I'm not a fan of everything that the New York Times does in the way of coverage, but they have come out with a superb piece in the past few days. The lead writer is Chris Buckley, the reporter who went into Wuhan as the quarantine was imposed. I have a lot of respect for that. And they've really dug into this. You can just look it up. And they go through how the Communist Party suppressed word about this virus. And even as people were beginning more and more to fall seriously ill, as it was becoming clear to the medical people there who were being told to shut up at risk of going to jail, basically, that this was a real problem. And what the Communist Party wanted to do in Wuhan was have its big party for Chinese New Year, was celebrate its achievements and so on. And this reached the point, nothing was supposed to interfere with the fun and the bread and circuses. Much as last October in Hong Kong, nothing was supposed to interfere with the 70th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. Never mind what's going on with the people.
And Claudia, to the degree that I understand that after the Chinese Communist Party was on notice that they had a contagious disease epidemic underway, they went ahead and, I gather, had a party at which something on the order of 130,000 people in Wuhan convened?
Yeah, it's even worse than that. This has become something of a tradition in Wuhan that every year for Chinese New Year, they have an enormous potluck dinner. So it's not only a party, it's that everybody brings a dish. This was this huge thing. As this was spreading, and as millions were flowing out of Wuhan to go home to their villages for Chinese New Year when everyone goes to see family, and all of this, they were being told, well, there's this thing going around, this pneumonia, but it's not contagious between people. It came from the wet market, the animal market that's been shut down, and everything's fine. And then, bam, within days, it was clear that it was not fine at all. And suddenly, this is a draconian Chinese Communist Party. Bang, when they saw that they could no longer hide it, sit on it, that reality was running right over those bounds, they then imposed quarantine on the entire city of Wuhan and some of the surrounding areas. In other words, they quarantined more than 50 million people. And the problem here is they did it without any organized way of providing them, for all the party that organizes the surveillance of their lives, providing them with the things that they needed to deal with this virus. In fact, there are accounts of desperate doctors in Wuhan running out of face masks, improvising face shields while they're treating patients out of transparent file folder covers. There have been many stories of, and there's pictures online, you can see it, of people packed into the halls of hospitals. They're just completely inadequate facilities to take care of them. And it's been again, classic Communist Party. It's been, the real help has been very slow in coming, and it's just this hellacious ghost town with, and at the same time, there's this great propaganda show of building a hospital in, you know, a matter of days, where you can watch live streamed online, enormous numbers of cranes madly setting up this facility. Well, they're setting up a facility of something like 1,000 beds. Meantime, the number of cases officially recorded in Wuhan, and this is probably a huge understatement, underestimate, because they're turning people away without diagnosing them at the hospitals or sending them home. Meanwhile, the number infected currently stands at more than 9,000.
Claudia, so let's cut to the chase here, because I've had some very interesting conversations with other China hands. And one of the things that's been impressed upon me is that in the past, dynasties have fallen in the wake of pestilence and plague. You've written in your piece in the Dallas Morning News that Xi is in trouble in connection with this particular challenge, and any government would be, let's face it. But give us a sense of how the Chinese Communist Party is likely to behave in the midst of all of this. Do you see them modifying their heavy-handedness, or do you anticipate that it's just going to get worse? Because that's what they do.
That's what they do, Frank. And I think under this lead ruler, under Xi Jinping, that's what he does. That's what he's been doing since he took power, actually in 2012 when he became the head of the Communist Party, and then 2013 president, and 2018 had the term limits lifted on his on the presidency, so he became president for life. And, you know, they've now sent the PLA medical unit into Wuhan. I'm not expecting that this is going to be sweetness and light. This is something where they want to make sure that people stay under control. And I think it's entirely consistent with the record of China's political system since the 1949 Communist Revolution, that if they have to start shooting people who are sick, they will do whatever it takes. I'm not saying they'll go around the hospitals and doing that. What I'm saying is that if they face any sort of uprising, I think they will do whatever it takes to put it down. And that's where there are a lot of things happening right now that are corrosive to their hold on power. You know, among other things, the Communist Party has been depending more and more on surveillance and facial recognition, on high-tech surveillance. Well, when people all start wearing face masks because they're trying not to get sick, that it becomes a little harder to control them with surveillance. When they become desperate enough, so they're going to say what they want to online because they don't feel they have anything left to lose, it becomes harder to really shut them up. So, yes, there's a big challenge right now to Xi Jinping's hold on power, but is it going to be enough to actually bring him down? I'm very skeptical that it could get that far. I think what it could be is one more crack in the bedrock, but when something actually really makes a change, I don't think we know. I think that that's partly a question of when China's people themselves finally get to some energy of reaction where they just won't stop in their demand that they be treated like human beings.
I earnestly hope that that day is at hand, Claudia Rosette, and I earnestly hope that our government will be standing with them as they seek that break from the Communist Party, not as, let's face it, has done in the past, propping it up, enabling it, underwriting it, which is, of course, the subject of our new national poll. Claudia, I'm going to send it to you, and I hope we can talk with you about it as it reflects on America's thinking about China. And some of the insights are very much informed, I think, by the kind of work that you have been doing over the years, and we are so appreciative of it. Come back to us again soon to talk about all of this. Claudia Rosette of the Independent Women's Forum and PJ Media, you are the best. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.